We started off talking about the vow of priority is what I called it, because who is supposed to be our number one in life? God, right? And who's our number two if you're married? Your spouse. God's our number one, our spouse is our number two, and if you're not married and you're looking for the number two, who do you have to have as your number one? God, right? For you single people and you college or high school students here that aren't married, I don't want you to turn it off either, because some of this or all of it is for you. Last week we looked at a real life example in the Bible of Jacob and Rachel and Leah, and just a big mess situation, because Jacob came into that relationship looking for all the wrong things, and because of that he found all the wrong things. This week we're going to turn back to the vow section of it. What we're going to do, and I told you this at the beginning, we're going to alternate. We're going to look at a different vow out of Genesis chapter 2, and then we're going to look at a scripture that tells that story. We looked at Jacob and Leah. This week we're going to look at what I call the vow of pursuit, and then next week we're going to look at another real life scenario in scripture of a marriage or a couple in scripture. But several weeks ago, I'm sitting down, I'm watching nature on television. You know you're old when what you watch on television, nature shows, but ever since my parents are here visiting this weekend, and that's all that's on the television. I don't know what that says about my dad, but it's always on. He always is watching nature on television, and we learned that from him growing up. So I was sitting down watching nature, and they had this show on about various mating rituals of animals, which was kind of funny to watch. And I'm sitting here watching. It started with something I was very familiar with. How many deer hunters do we have in here? Come on, men, raise your hand, ladies, if you deer hunt, thank you. Some of you raise two hands, because that's all you do. We're familiar with deer hunting. Has any deer hunters ever seen two bucks fighting before? I mean, live in person? I know some of you have. It's a neat thing. I mean, it's one thing to watch it on television, but it's something totally different, man, in the field. That foggy air comes in, and you just see those bucks out there. Bucks are dumb, by the way. We think about that. They have those big antlers. Samuel the other day said they have those antlers so they can protect themselves and protect the does. Is that why bucks have antlers, men? No. They don't fight anything but one another. The only reason that bucks have antlers is because of the women. That's how they fight for their right to have a mate. And if you've ever seen that before, they fight because of does. They fight to impress the ladies. That's the only reason. And so these bucks come on this video, and it talks about how the biggest buck, man, gets all the women, and they're fighting, and the bucks are fighting. Then after that, it showed these birds, and these birds, I just rewound and played again and again, had these birds from New Guinea or something, and these birds, they were colorful, and these male birds, they'd come up, and they'd stick their chest way out, and then they'd bow down real low, and they'd stick their chest way out, and they'd come up to one another, stick their chest out, bow down, stick their chest out, bow down, and whoever had the biggest chest and could bow the lowest was the winner of that competition. So, ladies, sometime when you have men hitting on you and there's more than one, just say, I want y'all to fight it out. Stick your chest out and bow down. And whoever gets the lowest without throwing their back out wins. That's what these birds were doing. And I was just laughing at that, thinking, that's just crazy how God designed those birds to do that. And as I'm watching this and I'm thinking about the series we've been in, I'm realizing something. We're the same way. People are the exact same way. Men, especially, are the exact same way. We do crazy, dumb stuff when we're in love. Crazy stuff. It's the exact same thing. If you go out to the football field or the basketball court or the baseball field and watch these high school students play, you'll see the men get up there with their bat. Every time you watch them, you can see it. Man, they'll take that bat and they'll hit it on there and they'll spit and everything, and they'll look over at the fence. And they'll see that their ladies are watching them. And they'll make sure. They'll be out on first base. And then, man, they'll be supposed to be ready to play. Coach is trying to get them on the game. And they'll be looking over here. Are you looking at me? You know, and I'm sorry the view y'all are getting. Because that's exactly what those boys do. And they'll bend just as low as they can and stick their hiney just as high in the air and go, looky here, ladies, I'm a baseball player. And football players do the same thing. Man, did you see that hit? And they'll hit and they'll want them, let you see that? Look at these bruises I got. And man, they think those ladies, we do the same thing. We may not stick our chest out and bow down, but we do the same thing. Hey, ladies, look, I won the game and I'm a superstar. That's what guys do. They stick their chest out. That's about what it is. Because, and this is my point, when we date, We chase. We pursue. There's a pursuit that happens. I want to drive that in today. We chase the one we love, and we dress nice, and we shower five times a day, and we spray on all sorts of cologne. My mom would always say she could tell when my brother and I liked a girl, because we would go from showering once every other day, maybe two or three days, to showering two or three times a day. And she would say there's never any water, and there's always steam coming out of that bathroom, because she knew. And we went through like 17 pairs of clothes, because we'd put a clothes on and we'd go outside for 5 minutes, and then we'd go in and take a shower and change again. And she was sick of doing the laundry. She could always tell when we had a girlfriend that we were after, because that's what we did. We showered more and we wore cologne, and we said, "Look at me," and we stuck our chest out and we bowed down. We do stuff like that. Does it make sense when you're in love? I want you to see that. And some of you, they're thinking, "Well, I barely remember that because I've been married for 50 years. I want you to go back to those days just a little bit. When I was dating Catherine, we just do crazy stuff. She lived in Stroud in high school when I dated her, and Stroud was about 30 minutes from Meeker. And her parents would drive 30 minutes to church. Her dad was my youth minister, and she had a curfew around 9 o'clock, which was pretty early throughout high school. Sometimes it would be 10, but mainly 9 o'clock, and we have service from 7 to 8 o'clock. And you can imagine, we had an hour, until she had to be home. Her parents left at 8, of course, and went back to Stroud. And if I wanted to see Catherine, then she could stay, and I could volunteer to drive her home, which meant a 30-minute drive. 7 to 8, we'd go to church. She had to be home by 9, so what time did I have to leave by? Do your math. 8:30, right? 8:40 if I wanted to meet. If you met Joe, he's tall and big and scary, and his wife was worse. So you didn't want to be late. They were waiting on the porch for you. And Joe would always say, "I'm sorry, Martha wants to talk to you. I was scared to death of that woman. But they're coming here next week, so you can't repeat any of this, by the way." But so we would stay. I'd say, just stay. I'll take you home. That meant we basically had 30 minutes to visit. By the time you get anywhere, it was time to leave. But we would do it, and I drove an 82 Chevrolet Silverado pickup with a 350 engine in it. It got right about 8.5 miles per gallon. And I worked stacking groceries or mowing lawns, and literally every dime I made, I put into fuel in that truck, taking Catherine back and forth to Stroud. And my mom and dad said, "Daniel, that is absolutely crazy, foolish. You don't need to be on the road that much. You're just getting to see each other for 15 or 20 minutes. But when we're in love, we do crazy, dumb, foolish stuff. Same way, later, after we met after college and we were dating there, Catherine worked nights. I worked days. She worked nights at a hospital. Her lunch was around 3:30 in the morning every night. And I worked at 6:30 every morning. I would get up around 6 to 7 every morning and work all day. And so I would take her lunch at 3:30 in the morning. I would get up, drive 30 minutes to Shawnee, pick up food, and take her lunch at 3:30 in the morning, get back, lay down for about an hour, and go to work. Now I look back at it and I go, crazy. Why would I do such a thing? That was so foolish. But we do things like that. We do crazy stuff sometimes in the name of love. What we do is this word, we pursue. There's a pursuit that goes on when we date. There's a pursuit. We're hunters, basically. Today, we're going to talk about the vow of pursuit. If you're taking notes, I want you to write it down. By nature, we tend to pursue what we do not have. By nature, we tend to pursue what we don't have. For example, a lot of guys will do all sorts of things to win their girls. Because men, we're hunters by nature. It doesn't matter if you deer hunt or not. By nature, men are hunters. We go after what we want. So when guys are dating, they'll go to chick flicks and they'll pretend to like them. Women, that's how that works. When your guy used to go see those movies, he was pursuing you. They'll talk on the phone for hours at a time and just listen to each other breathe. I remember the days that Catherine and I, we both had a TV in our room and we were dating, and she would go home and it would be really late and we would be on our phones literally watching TV together. And we would barely say anything. We would just be breathing. "Are you there? Yeah. Are you there? Yeah. Isn't this funny?" And I'm embarrassed to admit it. I don't recommend watching it. But in college, at 2 in the morning when we were on the phone, the only thing was on was the show Cheaters. Anybody ever seen the show Cheaters? Don't admit it. Don't. I'm not going to make you raise your hand. I wouldn't if I didn't have to. It's a show. They fall around couples and they try to prove when they're cheating on one another. Terrible show, especially for people that are dating to watch. I don't know. But we used to watch a show and we would say, "Oh, they're so crazy." And literally, I mean, for hours until 2 or 3 in the morning, we'd barely talk. And, I got to thinking about that. You know, that's what couples do. We pursue one another. It doesn't matter. We drive 2 or 3 hours to see one another, just to spend 15 minutes with them. Why? Because we pursue. There's a pursue going on. I want everybody to get that, because listen, this is what happens. Men hunt and they pursue. But listen, one day the men make the kill. I want you to follow me here. We get married. The men make the kill and we get married. And this can go for women too, where you're chasing and pursuing that guy, and then one day you get married. You get the kill and you get married, and out come a couple of kids, and 2 years go by, or 7 years go by, or 12 years go by, and you get a house, and you have a family and a job, and one day you wake up and you're like, what happened? We used to be so in love, and we used to sit on the phone and listen to each other breathe for hours at night, and now we don't even talk. See the difference? And now we don't even care about going out or to the movies, or we don't want to spend time with each other. Used to, we would drive an hour to spend 30 minutes with one another, and now we won't even go across town for a lunch break. It's sad, but it's true. See how the pursuit changes? I want you to see that, couples, today. There's something that changes, and this is when all sorts of problems start. I want you to hear this. You show me a divorce. Show me a divorce and I'll show you a couple that have stopped pursuing one another. Did you hear that? I deal with a lot of marriage counseling. A lot. And the one thing that I always see, you show me a couple that's having marriage problems and I'll show you a couple that have stopped pursuing each other. So this idea of pursuit, I know it seems fun and I know it seems light and this is going to be a very practical sermon, but I want you to take it very seriously. Think about it. Can you name any other area in your life that you can neglect and see improvement? Think about it. You know, think about your yard. Go out. It's time to, people are planting grass and watering and getting ready to start mowing. And they want to have that green, lush yard. Just try. Turn your sprinkler system off. Don't fertilize. Leave that thing alone for 2 or 3 years. And what happens to it? It dies. You'll have a brown dirt yard eventually in Texas, especially with this dry as it is. Think about your body. Man, eat just Twinkies for the next 6 months. See what happens to your body. Just neglect it. Don't exercise. No vegetables. Man, just French fries and Twinkies. That's it. What happened? You neglect your body, it's going to start falling apart. It doesn't work that way. You can neglect your business. Try that. Man, just don't pay your bills. Don't pay your bills. Don't study markets and don't invest right and see what happens. Don't hire the right people. Just neglect it. It won't improve. It'll disappear, go down. See, we apply that principle everywhere else, yet somewhere, somehow, and I said this last week, the two things that I think in our minds we think we can neglect and still be okay, one's our relationship with God, our number one. We think, I don't have to pray, I don't have to read my Bible, I don't really have to go to church, and everything will be okay. That's the number one thing we as church people think. We can neglect and it'll be okay, and it won't. And number two, our marriages, we think, I don't have to spend any time with my spouse. I don't really have to do anything nice for my spouse, and our marriage will be fine. Because once we get that ring on our finger, it's like it's everything okay. That's what we think. So I don't have to pursue anymore. I can neglect it, and it's not true. I don't know why we think that. You take any other area of our lives, and we'll realize, no, I can't neglect it, and it worked out. But our marriages, we do that. So the next few weeks, as we've looked, we've looked at how God has to be our number one. And last week we looked about Jacob and Leah. Today we're going to look at how the importance of pursuing and the vow that we're going to make. We're going to see it in Genesis. The vow that I want you to make at the end of the service is simple. I will pursue my number two. And I will always pursue my number two. Of course, we made that first vow the first week that I will pursue my number one. Today, we're going to talk about how and why we always should pursue our number two. Genesis 2:24, the verse will be on the screen. Terry has it up there for you. You can read it there or in your Bibles. This is out of the English Standard Version. I usually read New American Standard, so if it's a little different, that's why. Follow along with me. It says, "For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother..." And notice what it says there. It says, "Be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh." Now, what we're going to look at is this word united. It's the Hebrew word dubak. Everybody say dubak. dubak. And it's the Hebrew word united. It's an interesting word. We're going to look. I want to show you some ways that it's translated. You don't have to look them up. I just want you to see. Dubak is a different kind of word. We say united, but it actually means much more than a union or something put together. If you're taking notes, it actually means to cling to or to adhere or to pursue. The word means to catch by pursuit. It means to pursue with hard affection and hard devotion. It's not that we just pursue until we're married, but according to this word, we actually, it's a word that's ongoing. We continue to do it and to cling to for our entire lives. That's what this says. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother, pursue, be united, be joined, and continue to pursue hard his wife, and the two will become one flesh. Here's some different translations right out of the Old Testament of this word, dubak. I want you to just, and I'll read them to you. Solomon 67:3 talks about it. It says, I follow close behind you. Solomon is writing to his wife there. I follow close behind you. That word, I follow close behind you, is one word in the Hebrew language. It's the word dubak. So we don't see the word united there. I follow close behind you. Obviously, that's a memory verse for stalkers, I guess. Job 41:17 in the NIV, it says Job's talking about two things that are joined. He said they are joined fast to one another. They are dubak is what he says there in Job. Judges 20:45. This is probably the most vivid illustration. It's an army term. They've been at war and the enemy is fleeing. And in Judges 24, he says, they pursued hard after them. That word, pursued hard after them, is the word dubak there. There's lots of ways we can translate this. I just want you to see, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united really doesn't get the gist of that whole word there. That word united, it means to pursue hard after. So God's picture for marriage is not that we just are united, but there's actually this pursue, this hard pursuing after one another. That's what marriage is about. One of the great examples in Scripture to me of a couple who continued to pursue, we actually studied last week in Genesis 29. We read the story about Jacob, who was crazy in love with Rachel. And how many years did he have to work for Rachel? 7. And then what happened? He was given Leah, right? And then he had to agree to marry another 7. This is what I want you to think about that story. You may not have realized it. He worked 7 years and was given Leah. And then did he have to work another 7 years before he was given Rachel? Look it up in your Bibles later. He actually worked 7, was given to Leah. Then he agreed to work another 7, but he was actually given Rachel before he worked those 7. Isn't that interesting? And my whole point there is saying this. Jacob didn't work 7, get his wife, and stop. He got his wife and continued working 7 years for her. He continued to pursue. That word in that story is the word dubak. Jacob worked hard to earn her. He wanted Rachel, and he worked hard even after her. See, so many times we work really hard, men, especially at the getting married part. And then once we're married, we stop pursuing and working afterwards. So we're at the pancake supper the other night. Perfect example. Valentine's Day. If you didn't take your woman to the pancake supper, you missed out. That was the thing that all men were supposed to do, by the way. Had my wife there at the pancake supper, and we're eating, and two men, unknown name men, I won't name them, they both go to this church, they're both members of the Lions Club, really narrows it down. I walk in, and I said, and they're even here this morning, what do you know? I come in and I said, well, what'd you guys do for your wives for Valentine's Day? And you can get on to him later. Is David here this morning? I think he's out of town. He told me he was going to be. I told him I was going to pick on him. David says, I've got to go up to, it's 4:30, by the way. I've got to go up to the florist. David, it's too late, brother. It's 4:30. No, I've got to go to the Ibis or to the florist and get. And then another one of the men there said the same. Well, I'm working. I'm going to go up to the Ibis. And I don't know if Cindy got anything in time or not. Did she, Tim? Did he work that out? He did. Okay. He was late, Cindy. Really late. Really late. But he went up there and worked it out. And, both of them, I said, guys, you know, you're supposed to take care of this early this morning, and that was supposed to be done, or last week, you know, it's Valentine's Day. And, well, I intended, so that was the, I intended to do it, but I got busy, and I I wanted to do it, but my intentions, David even said it, my intentions were good. I want you to hear this about intentions, because here's an interesting thing about intentions when it comes to marriage. This is real practical advice. You can write it down. I want you to remember it. Generally, we judge our spouses by their actions. Do you hear that? We generally judge others, our spouses particularly. This works for any other area of life, though. We generally judge them by their actions. But we judge ourselves by our intentions. See the difference? Let that sink in just for a second. We judge others by their actions. We judge our spouses by our actions. But we judge ourselves by our intentions. You know, you didn't do what you were supposed to do, so I'm angry with you about that. But I'm okay because I intended to do it and I didn't do it. See the difference? We do that. My heart's okay and my action, my intentions were there. Your actions, that's how I'm going to judge you. But I'm going to judge myself by my feelings or my intentions. I was thinking about doing it. I was going to do it, so I'm okay in not doing it. But you, it doesn't matter. You didn't do it, period. I'm mad at you. See how that happens in our relationships, in our marriages? You married couples are going, yeah, you may not admit it. My goal for today, what I want you to see is, I want those of us that are married, those that aren't, I want you to help convert your good intentions to actions. I'm going to give you three ways to do that, because I want to change what we think and what we expect to do. I want to close that gap between our intentions and our actions, because so many times when I'm counseling, it will come out, well, I thought about doing that, or I wanted to do that, and all I would say, and the wife's, oh, really, you did? And I'll say, that shouldn't make you feel any better. He didn't do it. She didn't do it. I don't care if they thought about it. I can say that. I mean, come on. They have to do it. We have to move from our intentions to actions. Women, men, don't ever be okay with intentions. Okay? Don't do it. That's not right. You wouldn't be okay if you went into your boss and it's paycheck time. Well, I intended to pay you, but I'm not going to. Oh, that's okay as long as you intended to, right? Is that how we work? No, you're going to say, you better pay me, you better turn your intentions into dollars, or I'm going to quit. But somewhere in marriage, we think, oh, well, if he intended to, that's so sweet. I've actually heard women say that. He intended to, that's so sweet. No, it's not. That's not sweet. That's a lie. That men are good at that. I intended to buy you flowers. Really? I hear him. Oh, no. Go buy flowers, cheapskate. Do what you say you're going to do. But I hear it all the time, and it's mainly men. I'm sorry, men, for picking on. I mean, I intended to have the house clean when you got home, but, nature show was on, so I didn't watch it. No, clean the house. So part of our assignment this week is going to be to close that gap between intentions and actions. Our number one, first point today, first, we're going to pursue with our words. We're going to pursue our spouse, our husband, our wife, with our words. This is my challenge. When you think of something good to say, say it. Everybody hear that? When you think of something good to say, say it. Every time you think of something good, I want you to say it. Whenever you think of something good, every time, no matter how small or insignificant, I want you to say it. This is biblical. Hebrews 3:13. I don't have it on the screen. Look it up later. It says, encourage one another daily, as long as it's called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin. Encourage one another daily. We're supposed to do that, especially with our spouse. Every day, whatever it is, it's easy. Men, women, it doesn't matter. Little things, big things. These are just some examples. Thank you for picking up the kids today. That was sweet of you. That's easy. Thank you for doing that. You noticed. You did such a good job at typing out that presentation at work today. I know you're just going to have and do a great job at work. I appreciate the fact, ladies, I know this seems ridiculous. I appreciate the fact that you put the toilet lid down every time. You know, say it. If you think it, when you go in there and that lid's down and you thought, hey, that's nice of him, instead of just thinking it, go say it. Hey, I appreciate that you do that, because I know we do when he doesn't. Right? Yeah, it doesn't matter. If it's 2 in the morning, I hear it. Ah! I'm like, whoo, I'm in trouble. Where's the covers? And say it. It doesn't have to be big. Thank you for going by and picking up milk and eggs. That was really meaningful that you text me today and said that you love me. Thank you for remembering to drop off the dry cleaning. I love the way you do this. I love you do the way you do that. Oh my goodness, man, this is a big one. Your hair, you got your hair done. It looks wonderful today. Don't forget that. That will get you in trouble. whenever you think of something good, you want to say it. I want to be real specific because there's a bunch of different ways that we need to pursue each other with words. Men, I want to talk to you first. And I want you here. I've got two words up there. Words of affection. That's your word. Affection. All the men in the room say affection. Affection. I like those deep voices saying affection. Now, I want to be careful here, but this is man-to-man time. I want to be real specific. If you're taking notes, here's, guys, this is what you need to remember. When you pursue her with your words, they're words of affection. When I'm talking about words of affection, they're not selfish words. Everybody understand that? They're not selfish words. They're not focused on something later. All you men with me now? I know you're all thinking it, because most of the time, around 6 p.m. in the evening, most men will be going to get really nice and friendly, and I'm going to say nice things, but you know I love you, haven't said a word all day, but we're approaching evening, and so we're going to make sure, when I say words of affection, non-selfish words, I'm going to drive that home in a minute with you guys, but one thing I want you to remember, word of affection, I'm saying words that don't have to lead to something later. All you men do this. Words of affection. Thank you. I see you that you're listening. You're not liking what I'm saying. But I want you to be with me. I'm careful here because of our audience. But unselfish words of affection. I know it's hard to say. It's even harder to think. Because guys, generally, we don't know how to compliment people. We don't. We're terrible at complimenting people. In fact, we are really good at using uncomplimentary words to compliment people. Like men, for example, we use cut downs for compliments. You men do this all the time. If I'm going to compliment another man's children, man, those men are beautiful and they're pretty and they're cute. If I'm going to compliment them, what I do is I say, man, Chance, how did such an ugly guy like you have beautiful kids? Is that not how we do it, Chance? I probably said it to you before, haven't I? I don't know how you do it. You had great kids, but you're just as ugly as a dog. And that's a men's way of saying, your kids are really cute and I like them. You see that? That's what we do. Man, you're, how did such an ugly, mean, bald guy like Rocky get Martha? I mean, right? That's how we do it. I'm complimenting his wife, but I'm cutting him down because men, we're terrible at compliments. We do that. You know, that's how men compliment. Instead of saying, hey, you look nice today, you know, we say, man, John Paul, your wife must have worked all day on you. That's my way of saying he looks nice, but I'm not about to say you look nice. That's how men compliment. Women don't do that. You'll never hear them do that. Women don't walk up to another woman and say, man, how did a skinny leg, ratty hair, ugly woman like you have such beautiful kids? Women don't do that, do you? You come up and say, you have the most precious, beautiful, sweet, perfect kids. They take after their mom. And I love that dress. Where did you buy it? You have such good style. Men, we just don't do that. We're terrible at compliments. Terrible about it. So men, here's the best advice I can give you. Ladies, I want you to do something. Show me two fingers like this, all you ladies. Do this. Do this. Okay. I'm serious. I don't want you to hear this part. It won't count later. Men, I want you to listen real careful. How many men know how to say I love you? Now, women, you're supposed to be holding your ears. Men, you say I love you, but this is my trick. We're good at that. I love you is so easy. I want you to add one word to that. I love you, women to everybody. Because. All men say because. Because. And then you say why. Okay? Women, you're good now. I love you because. And fill in that blank. I love you because you've been faithful for all these years. I love you because you've given me these three beautiful children. I love you because you work 40 hours a week and you're still able to do all these other things. I love you because you're a woman that loves Jesus. I love you because, gentlemen, if you think of something good to say, say it. Words of affection, it's really easy. I love you, men, because. Because, don't just say I love you. I love you because. Pursue her with words of affection. Ladies, this is for you. And I'm as serious as this. I want you to see the difference. Words of affection are not what gets your guy. I want you to follow this. Listen to it seriously. If I could write books on this, I see it all the time in counseling. Women, you don't pursue your men with words of affection. You pursue him with words of affirmation. Words of affirmation. Why? Because as confident as he wants to appear, he needs to know that you believe in him. He needs to know that you believe in him. Ladies, if there's anything you understand about your marriage, you understand this. Your man, your husband, he's becoming what you believe and what you say about him. All the women do this. Your man is becoming what you believe and what you say about him. So you nag him and tear him down, he will become less of a man, I promise you. He will become less of the person that you need him to be spiritually, physically, around the house, at his job, every single time. You tell him what he's not, he'll become less of what you want him to be. Every time. Every time. So you pursue your man with words of affirmation, because no matter how he acts on you, your opinion of him matters more than anyone else's. He may not act like it does, but it does. You know him more intimately than anyone else, and if you don't believe in him, he will not believe in himself either. Because of men, we've been trained by the world. It's not accurate, it's not good, but we've been trained that we're only worth the last compliment that we've received. Men are trained that way. Hey, you did a good job today. Great sales last month. It's a new month. Last month doesn't matter. That's what men are like. We're trained from that last month. You're only as valuable as what you can produce today. I hear it all the time. It doesn't matter if we had 500 people here today. Next Sunday, if there's one person in here, I won't hear a word about 2 or 3 or 4 or 500 people. I won't hear a word about good sermons. But when it goes bad, you better believe it. I will hear it in my office. And it's not that people don't give me compliments. I'm a man. Doesn't matter what I heard last week. The only thing that sticks is what I hear today. And women, I want you to hear that. Doesn't matter how much you bragged last week. Doesn't matter how much you affirmed last week. Men, we're creatures. We're trained that way. After I preach a message, it's the weirdest thing. I mean, I preach and I love compliments and I love people to say that God's speaking to them. But honestly, in my heart, it doesn't matter what you think. It shouldn't be. It's not healthy. I love you all and I care, but what really matters when I walk in the door at the house and my wife is cooking dinner for my kids and I walk in and I feel very vulnerable and I feel like I've been at war all weekend long and I've come home all bloody and here I am and she's cooking lunch and she's not paying much attention and I'll say, so Catherine, what do you think? Was the message clear? Was it powerful? Was I funny when I needed to be funny? Did I preach God's word? Was it captivating? Did you like it? Was it powerful? Why? Because I need to know that she believes in me. I'm a husband, and that's how husbands are wired. I need to know what she thinks. If she believes in me, I don't care what all the critics say. Women hear that. It's not just me. Your husband is the same way. He may not admit it. He may not tell it. And I'm being very vulnerable and open this morning. Your husband is the same way. I don't care how proud and strong and he acts. He's the same way. He needs you to affirm him. If she believes me, it doesn't matter what others say. She knows that. Women, he needs your words of affirmation as much as you need his words of affection. You tear him down, I promise you, he'll become less of what you want. You build him up, and he'll become the man of God that you're waiting for. I don't even care if you totally believe it yet. Just practice what I'm preaching this morning. I told you it was a real practical sermon. You just practice it. Here's what I see in you, husband. Here's what I believe in you, husband. And you watch him rise to what you say. You watch it happen. He may not even be there yet. You start speaking it to him, and you watch him rise to what you say. If you think something good, you say it. You think something good, you tell your spouse. Men, you use words of affection. Women, you use words of affirmation. Second thing, if you're taking notes, we're going to pursue with our words. We're going to pursue with our actions. This is an easy one. If you think of something special to do, you're going to do it. Move those intentions to actions. If you think of something special, you're going to do it. Now, those of you who aren't married, I know I don't want to leave you out. You're thinking, man, this one stinks. I don't have anything to speak to or do anything. Those who aren't married, I want you to hear, you can actually start pursuing your spouse right now. Did you know that? You can actually start pursuing them right now. I know that sounds kind of weird. You can start pursuing your number two even before you meet him or her. You can do things that would be incredibly special later. Before I met Catherine, for instance, I had a journal that I kept, and it was on my computer, and every day I would type and I would write my journal with God. I would write my prayers, and I would write the things that God was speaking to me, and I would write verses that I would read, and occasionally it may be about the person that I would marry later, and I would write that. God spoke to me today, and I was reading this verse, and it reminded me of you, and I don't know who you are, but I'm believing that you're going to be just the perfect person that God has for me, and I'm praying this over you, and I'm believing. And I'm praying for you, and I'm lifting you up, and I want you to know I'm keeping myself pure for you. And I'm praying that you're doing the same for me. You see, you can actually prepare. I did that, and I had all this journal for Catherine. We got married on our honeymoon. I set it up, or not our honeymoon, on the night that I asked her to marry me, and she said yes. And I said, I want you to read this. And it was God's journey, and how he would spoke to me, and how he led me to her, and what he had said, and every word that God had spoke, every sermon that I had heard when I was in a sermon, and somebody like me was preaching to me, and I was hearing, and I was writing down, man, this is what God's saying, every prayer that I prayed. So I wasn't even married yet, and I was pursuing. See, think of something special in doing it before I even met her, before we were even married. You can do that today, students. You can do that today. You can think of something special, and you can start doing it. You can write letters today to your future spouse. It's a neat idea. They'll read them one day, and it'll mean something to them. You can write down a scripture that may mean something to her later or him later on in life. You can write down your prayers without even knowing his or her name. You don't have to wait to start pursuing your number two. You can actually do that now. So back to the married people. Men, well, I'm going to talk to you first. We're pursuing with our actions. James 4:17 says, anyone who knows the good that he ought to do and does not do it. You know what that says? He sins. That's what that verse says. That's challenging. Anybody who knows what he ought to do but doesn't, he sins. When you think of something good, you're going to do it. Here's something that I've learned. I used to always think that flowers and chocolate were everything. How many men have bought flowers and chocolate? We're good at that, man. We mess up. We're good at that. Flowers and chocolate. I want you to see that since I've been married, I have learned something, that to a woman there are other things that are sometimes a lot more romantic. And a lot better. We're pursuing with our actions. For example, at my house, better than chocolate is sometimes for me to go and bathe the kids. Three kids, I go back and they're like three soaked, naked little midgets running around. And they get in the bathtub and they decide that they need toys. And Isaac is always the one that goes gets the toys. And so I get him in and he gets out and he's naked and he's running in the hallway peeing the whole way. So I'm chasing with the steam cleaner, and I'm getting in the bath. But by the end of it, I believe in the pressure wash system. I take the shower down, and it's like 300 PSI, and I put soap on their heads, just on their heads, and it runs down, and then I pressure wash it off. And they hide. They're like, no, the pressure washer. And I do that until they're clean. And when it hits their bellies and their back, they love it because it tickles, and they run and hide. But I bathe them, and I get them dressed, and I send them into Catherine, and she sees them. Whoa, they're all bathed, and they're dressed, and they're clean, and it makes a difference. It means something to my wife. Things that I wouldn't think would be a big deal. Sometimes I just go and unload the dishwasher. My wife hates unloading the dishwasher. I know that. She's told me. So what I like to do, man, I go in and I unload the dishwasher, and I don't even tell her. And then I watch her that evening until finally she'll pass that thing 100 times, and finally she'll reach out, and she's going to unload it. She opens it up, and it's empty. And I can see the look in her eye. It's more than chocolate, I promise. It's more than flowers any day. And she closes that thing and she goes, oh, and I can tell she's just thinking good things. And I'm just loving her with my actions. Just the other night, we're laying in bed and it's midnight and we're tired and I've been working and we had a long day and she's done the laundry and she says, I've got to go put the clothes in the washer in the dryer. How many women have been there? Got to go do it. They'll sour it. You know what I said? I already did. The dryer's running right now. It's already running. And men, I tell you, that works great. I'm not going any further, but it works great. I just want to be open. I mean, we're pursuing with our actions. When you think of something special, do it. When you have a few free hours in the afternoon, go home and clean your house. Do all the laundry. Call somebody if you don't know how to do it. Vacuum, dust, organize, you know, make it spotless. Women ought to be hearing amens at some point. When you think of something special, do it. You know what, for just a few years ago, my grandpa, he's gotten sick now and he can't, but I was visiting with him one time and grandma literally did not know how to, my dad's mom did not know how to pump her own gas because she had never in her life had to pump her own gas because her husband made sure her car was full. And never, I mean, they've been married, I don't know, how old are they? 64 years. She's never pumped her own fuel because her husband did it for her, because he's loving her with his actions. Ladies, your turn. Pursue him with your actions. I'm going to be careful here. If you think something special, do it. And do it often. Y'all know where I'm at now? Do it. Here's the deal, ladies. Every now and then when he's praying with you and loving you and serving you and speaking special words over you, you reward him. You get creative and you get fun and you reward him. Now, I want to be careful here because we're going to have to talk about physical intimacy. It's a big part of marriage. I want to be careful here in a church service with kids. But ladies, he is not after a clean house. You understand me? He does not care that the dishwasher, that's not, you empty the dishwasher for him. That is not what rewards him. You understand me? Everybody on page with me now, except for you students, and you're not listening to this because you're not married yet, right? I want you to see that women get creative, get fun, reward him. He doesn't really even care that much about food. That's not what he's after. I'm not going to get specific like I did for the men, but I want you to know if you think of something special, do it. And do it more and do it often and do it for the glory of God. Spice it up. Pursue him with your actions. Throw out the sweatpants and the nightgown and reward your husband. You understand me? And that's as nice way as I can put it in a church service. God gave us that in marriage. It's as biblical as could be. I'm not going to hide around it. I just want you to see, and some of your women are thinking, well, Daniel, and you men are thinking, well, Daniel, I did that last week. Listen, with husbands and wives, all points expire at midnight. Okay? They're all out the window. Doesn't matter what you did yesterday or the day before. Your husband does not care that 2 weeks ago y'all did that one thing, and your wife doesn't care anymore that you did the dishwasher 3 days ago because she's had to do it 3 times since then. All points expire at midnight. Do it. You can't bank points. Pursue one another with your actions daily. And the third thing, and I want to drive this home if you're taking notes, if you want something different, be it. Pursue with your life. Pursue your spouse with your life. Instead of whining about what you don't have and what she's not and what he isn't doing, if you want something different, you be it. You want something different, you bring it. I tell kids all the time, oh, no one likes me. I don't have a boyfriend. I don't have a girlfriend. I can't find anybody to marry. I'll say, well, are you somebody that you would want to marry? Well, would you marry you? I don't blame the girls. I don't blame the boys. Become what you want. Become first. Pursue with your life. Bring Christ through you. I don't care how she's not meeting your needs, men, or how she's not affirming, and or women, how he's not affectionate, or how he's not helping around the house. I don't care. Okay? Because that's the excuse. I'm not going to do it unless he does. You bring Christ into your relationship. You determine to be what you want him to be, or what you want her to be. You know, women, they just have this special quality. They're multipliers. Whatever you give them, men, they will multiply over and over again. You give them an ugly house, and she'll make it a beautiful home. You give them groceries, and they'll make you a fantastic meal. You give them love, and they will give you children. They will multiply, trust me. That's why, gentlemen, if you're really struggling about what you're getting, you ought to look at what you're giving. You ought to look at what you're giving. You give your woman a hard time, she'll make your life miserable. She'll multiply what you give. To get what you once had, I want you to follow this. You have to do what you once did. Because we all go back to those times, that highlight reel in our life, when we dated and when we were in love and when we chased and pursued one another. And we say, I don't have that anymore. To get back what you once had, you have to do what you once did. You have to pursue. You have to go and pursue with your words and pursue with your actions. It's a very biblical idea. Revelations 2:5. Now, God applies this verse to our relationship with him, but it will apply to your relationship with anyone. God talks about losing your first love. And he says, in order to fix it, look what he says. Remember the height from which you have fallen. Repent and do the things you did at first. Do the things you did at first. You know, we say, you don't fall out of love. You stop pursuing is what happens. And your spouse stops pursuing you. And you get further and further apart. So I think a lot of problems in marriage is right here. We stop pursuing. If you want what you had, do what you did. If you want what you're getting now, you just keep on doing what you're doing. But if you want something different, you be it first in your life. And then you see that change your life. That's the vow of pursuit. I will always pursue my spouse. Very practical, and we're done. We're going to pray in just a second. Very practical. I know it was a practical sermon. I meant for it to be. Does me no good to come up here and talk about the theology of marriage without telling you how to do it. And most of the problems that come in my office, it's not because they don't understand that marriage is forever and it's eternal and we make it come. It's not because of those things. It's because we stop doing these things. We stop pursuing, and then we wonder, well, I'm putting no time into it, and it's broken, and it's not getting any better. Well, There you go. Start pursuing again. Start hunting again. Start affirming. Start pursuing with your words. Start pursuing with your actions. Be what you want in a spouse and see God turn your marriage around. I'm going to close with this. You know, God first, my prayer is that He would stir us first to pursue Him. Because we know that He has to be our number one in order for our spouse to be our number two. Pursue Him first. If that's you today and you're not doing that, you have to put God first in your marriage in order for your spouse to be the person that they need to be. But there's some couples in here that just need to determine, you know what, I'm sitting beside my husband or my wife today, or maybe I'm not, and they're not, I haven't pursued, and we've stopped pursuing. And so this week, spouses, husbands, wives, you need to make a commitment. I'm going to pursue my wife. Man, I'm going to hunt her, and I'm going to hunt him, and I'm going to pursue him with my words, and I'm going to pursue him with my actions. If that's you today, I'm going to leave that between you and God, but I want you to commit to that before the end of the service. But there are some people here, maybe you don't know the Lord at all, and I want you to hear this. There's an amazing parable of the 99 sheep, 100 sheep. One of them goes astray, just one. And the shepherd, Jesus tells a story. He leaves the 99 sheep. And he goes and searches for the one. And the word that he uses in the New Testament story there in Luke, he uses the word dubak in the Greek. Because what God does is he leaves those 99 and he goes and pursues that one. And this is what I want you to hear on that this morning. If you're not a believer in here today, if you don't have a relationship with God here today, I want you to know that God's pursuing you. God's done that to all of us. He pursued us at the cross and gave it all. He shows us His love through His word and through His actions. So we have an ultimate example there. If you've never received, if you've never turned around, I want you to know God is pursuing you today. If you've never accepted Him, if you've never made the decision to follow Jesus with your life and given Him your life, I'm going to be down front. We're going to have a short invitation. I want you to have an opportunity to do that. God is pursuing you today with His words, with His actions. He pursued you at the cross. And that gives us, it's His love, by the way, couples, that we love our spouses with. We pursue one another. And inside of my ring to this day, 1 John 4:19 says, we love because He first loved. And it's always a reminder to my wife and I that we love one another because God loved us first. He is first. We have to be pursued by Him first. And it is that love that we take into our relationship with one another. So if you don't know the Lord's love today, I want to give you an opportunity. I'll be down front. You step out and come down and meet me. I would love to pray and introduce you to Him this morning. Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Father, we